to the Parentpreneur Accelerator podcast, helping you build the business of your dreams while having time with the family you love. Here is your host, Cyril, the entrepreneur and proud dad, Alexis Kingsbury.
Thank you very much for your help, Ethan. Hi there, it's Alexis here. On this week's episode, I'm interviewing Joe Bevilacqua. Joe is the owner of Serenity Loves and founder of The Unique Mumpreneur. Serenity Loves is a hair and beauty salon with an on-site creche, and The Unique Mumpreneur is an online and in-person community for women, mothers or not, who want to make the first steps to starting their own business or grow an existing one. It's designed to support mothers who juggle entrepreneurship with the challenges of raising a family and establishing a work-life balance. Before she launched The Unique Mumpreneur, she had many jobs involving customer service and sales, and after years of earning amazing money with no sight of a long-term career, she decided that something was missing, and she took the decision to retrain and formed a career within childcare, which is another passion of Jo's. She then founded Hallmark Carpets and Flooring in 2009 in partnership with her husband whilst on maternity leave, despite knowing nothing about the industry, but she still made it a success, and whilst pregnant with her second daughter, had the idea of a one-stop hair and beauty salon with a supervised creche, which led her to open the doors to Serenity Loves. So in this episode, we're going to discuss starting a business whilst on maternity leave, doing what you love and are super passionate about, and delegation and how she's grown her businesses and made things work. So, Joe, thanks so much for joining me.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Well, you've had a very varied career, from retail to childcare and owning your own business and being in partnership with your husband and so on. Tell us about what that's been like in terms of the perhaps the skills you've developed, and what's been easiest and toughest for you throughout that journey.
Okay, so yeah, as you say, it has been quite varied. Actually, listening to you, it sounds like you're speaking about somebody else. Actually, it's quite funny, isn't it? But no, I think I'm just the ultimate creative. I think I've done a lot of work on self-development. I do tend to get bored quite quickly. So I've sometimes been in conflict with myself, I think, over the years. And I think doing some self-development over the last couple of years and kind of delving in a little bit deeper has made a lot of sense to me. So when I was younger, I kind of fell into retail, and I've always loved being around people, making them happy. I'm quite a nosy person, so I love kind of building relationships with people and getting to know them. And I'm just one of those people that it's a bit of a fixer. So I think customer service roles have always kind of been at the forefront of what makes me happy. And that's probably why I did so well in the jobs that I did have when I was younger. Then moving into sales, and it was also kind of a customer service based role, and did really well with that. And I really loved that. And I think when you're 18, and being able to kind of be treated like an adult and have the flexibility, but actually learn these skills and how to help people and get the right products and services for them, I learned a lot kind of in that role. And that was one of my favorite roles, as you touched on earlier. But I think sometimes with sales, you almost have a ceiling. I wasn't really interested in going into management at that time. And childcare is also something that I really loved as growing up and stuff. One of my first jobs was as a babysitter. So I decided to change my career into childcare. And that was great. And again, I loved that. And I did my MBQs and worked my way up to be a supervisor. And then I fell pregnant with my first daughter. And that was definitely, I think, if many parents are listening today, they might kind of resonate with the fact that as soon as you get pregnant, your whole life changes and your mindset changes, and the priorities in your life change, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a It's one of, I mean, it's the, almost a cliche of how much of a life-changing moment mm-hmm. it is, but it's at every level, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. it's your what you value and how you end up spending your time and where you spend your money. You know, it's everything. It's a
what
full
did we
shift
do
of all your
time courses. And money before we had children.
Yeah. It's one of those things, like when you speak to people that haven't got kids and you're just kind of talking about. Yeah, and they're like, oh, so when do you do this? It's like, I don't have time to do that. It's like, not even, no.
That's gone. Those days are gone. Yeah. So, yes, yeah, so I think definitely the kind of day that I found out I was pregnant was life-changing. I mean, you have to change your lifestyle quite quickly. I was still quite young, probably. I think I was like 24, 25, maybe. To be fair, the last kind of 10 years have been a bit of a blur. But yeah, I had to change my lifestyle quite quickly. And it was really apparent that actually I was going, and I loved my job in a nursery. Absolutely loved it. I loved the kids. I loved the parents. I loved the team. I loved what we did. I loved that whole nurturing side of the career. Not so much the paper side. But actually, I knew that I wasn't going to go back to that job after maternity leave, because I just didn't see the point in going back and looking after, because I was in the toddler room, I just didn't see the point in going back and working in the toddler room looking after 20 other toddlers and having my child either downstairs in a baby room with other lovely people or family. And I don't know, it just didn't sit right personally with me. It just didn't make sense to me, to be honest. So I think whilst on maternity leave, I really tried to think about actually what are our options and how does that look like. And to be honest, it was just a case of my husband had worked for the same company for years and had a few times asked for a pay rise and more responsibility and kind of asked to be a contractor rather than maybe employee. And it was always kind of pushed under the carpet because he's pretty laid back. He's the complete opposite to me. And then there was an issue with kind of paternity leave and stuff. And I just kind of threw my toys out of the pram and said, actually, do you know what? You're brilliant at what you do. He's one of the best fitters in Peterborough. We can do this. So we went up to the bank and we got a 20 grand loan and bought a van and a website and business cards. And that's kind of where the first business started, really. So, yeah, I had no previous experience with it, but my husband had. And I just think actually we both have very different skills. So he was able to do kind of the fitting and things like that, whereas I was able to maybe concentrate on the marketing and things like that. So it did work really, really well for the first couple of years. It was quite weird saying to people that I owned a flooring company, but it worked for sure. And then I fell pregnant with Lottie, my second child. And again, that was a huge kind of life-changing circumstance as well. There was obviously quite a short age gap between them. And the flooring company was doing really well. But actually, it kind of occurred to me that actually, God forbid, if anything happened between me and my partner, that actually it was more his business than probably mine. I wouldn't be able to run the flooring company without him. I was doing my degree with childcare. And yeah, it just came to a point one day where I had a hairdresser at my house and I was 6 months pregnant. I had Alana hanging off my leg, asking for biscuits or juice or whatever, like the toddlers usually do when you're in the middle of something. And I just thought, there has to be something out there that is there for parents. And actually, after a bit of research, there wasn't. So that's kind of where the idea formed for the salon with a creche. And within kind of, I think it was 6 or whatever weeks, I'd had a 40-page business plan done. I took it a lot more seriously than we did the Hallmark. I think because we did Hallmark from home, there was kind of low overheads, but actually taking on a team and a premises was way more kind of serious to me. So then we opened that when Alana was just before she was 3 and Lottie was probably only about 9 months old. So yeah, I'm kind of a person that once they make a decision, I commit to it and kind of go all in, to be honest. So I think there's various different things that have helped me in each of my jobs and that I've learned and skills that I've then been able to put into business for sure.
Yeah,
So I think I'd hope that answers your question.
yes, it definitely does. And so because it's interesting, you mentioned as you've kind of gone through the process on different businesses, you've kind of taken what you've learned and the next time around done it as you describe kind of a bit more seriously or with a bit more organization and so on. Because I know that before you had children and when you were quite a few years before that, you had had some issues around kind of debt and financial management there. And yet now when when you describe then the difference between that and then taking out the bank from the loan from the bank and doing your business plan and so on, it's very clear that you've kind of used those experiences early on and then brought them forward.
Oh God, 100%. Yeah, I was 18 and earning £2,500 a month. I mean, I was probably earning more than my mum and my stepdad were together at 18. Do you know what I mean? I thought I was the bee's knees, to be fair, rocking around in kind of Versace jeans and going out every night in taxis there and everywhere. Like, I had no concept about savings or investment or anything like that at 18. I was living my best life, to be fair, going on holidays with the girls and all sorts. And that keeping up that lifestyle actually is really, really expensive. Yeah, and quite quickly actually, then having your own house at 18, and unfortunately I didn't buy it, I decided to rent it, which was obviously a big mistake looking back now. So actually getting into quite a lot of debt at such a young age, in hindsight, yes, it wasn't great at the time, but actually then living on practically nothing and trying to get yourself out of that does teach you huge lessons about cash flow and things like that, which is imperative for business. I know that in business, it's they say kind of turnovers, what is it, vanity, profit, sanity, but actually cash is king. So
Absolutely.
yeah, so I think actually if I hadn't gone through that personally and going from earning thousands per month to actually getting myself into thousands of pounds, tens of thousands of pounds worth of debt, actually I probably would have not been as careful in business with my money for sure. Because sometimes you can, I mean, you probably know, you can look in your bank and there's loads of zeros on there, and then you get hit with a VAT bill or whatever, and you think, oh yeah, actually, I forgot about that one that was coming out. So it's just to make sure that you're under no illusion as to actually what's going out and what's coming in. So yeah, that taught me huge lessons personally and professionally for sure.
Fantastic. And so, for anyone that's kind of starting up new and hasn't had those experiences, perhaps they've previously worked in some kind of corporate role or something. What would you say are the biggest lessons that you learned, or the other things that you kind of took forward into your new businesses when starting them? You mentioned that planning your cash flow and having a really good visibility of that. I mean, you mentioned the VATs and so on. I'm a big fan of putting money aside every month for your corporation tax, for your VAT, putting it in separate bank accounts so that it's not just on a spreadsheet that you know how much is for what, but also you can look at the bank balances and know what you've got and so on if you put the money aside. Any other tips that you'd say, yeah,
Oh my
this makes
God,
all the
yeah,
difference?
so many. From day dot with Serenity, I had a really good accountant on my side. So although I did the business plan, and did kind of all the your competitor analysis and all of your ideas and what our team was going to look like, when it came to the figures, that was something that I actually wanted to make sure that I was getting right. Because taking on a premises and a team and taking on people that are looking to you to make sure that they're going to get paid every month, that was a huge responsibility for me. I'd never been in that position before, and I wanted to make sure that actually what I was doing was right and that my numbers were right. I knew what my break even was. I knew what I needed to take to cover all of my outgoings. I knew what I needed to take to earn X amount of profit that I needed to do, or to pay the director's loan or the investment loan and stuff like that. So I didn't want to be under any false sense of security, really, or having to get to the end of every month and scrimp and scrape and feel that pressure and not be able to sleep at night. So having that accountant right from the beginning and doing our cash flow forecast, so actually this is the rent, this is what we estimate your gas and electricity and your phone and your bins and everything else. And he was thinking of things that we had to pay for that I had no idea about when I went into business and had a property. So I didn't know you had to pay for your bins. I just assumed you had the same ones as domestic. But when you're a business, you have to pay for everything. So yeah, I think having that knowledgeable advice about numbers is really, really important. So actually, we knew that actually, if we did a discount on something, that there was the right amount of margin in there, that actually we could do that and we weren't going to be losing too much money. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
But actually, with setting up the Unique Mumpreneur, that's been set up for 2 years, and that is about helping kind of women in business to start and grow their own businesses. And there's so many people that I come across that have no idea about their numbers. And it really shocks me, because I think, actually, how do you know how well you're doing, or how do you know where you need to get to, if you have no clarity on paper or an Excel sheet or whatever of what is good and what isn't good? Because as a business, you're always hit by unexpected bills and repairs or whatever. So actually, that whole clarity on your numbers is so important. So I would always, always recommend getting a really good accountant, because that's seen me through some really kind of uncertain times. For sure. And I don't think that I would have the clarity that I do about my numbers now if I didn't have that expert advice at the beginning of our journey.
Yeah, definitely agree on having the clarity on the numbers and getting the expert advice. It's a funny one, though, because I know from speaking to other entrepreneurs and those that are in the early days and so on, knowing how to find a, you know, in quotes, good accountant is difficult if you've not experienced multiple accountants. And of course, I've had plenty of good accountants that have no way of giving me clarity on my numbers. And of course, it's possible to have all your numbers well put out and even accurate, and yet still the business owner has no clarity on the numbers. So it's a tricky one, because I think that entrepreneurs, particularly those that aren't keen on the numbers, you know, don't like a spreadsheet, etc. Because there are some that, you know, love a spreadsheet. You know, they get all geeky about it and so on.
I hate them. I'm not a detail person whatsoever. But they definitely it's a tool, I think, to keep you on track for sure.
But I think you've got, as an entrepreneur, you can't overlook it. I think it isn't something you can just say, oh, well, I'll delegate that. Or, you know, I'm not good at data. I'm not good at numbers. I'm not good at spreadsheets. Therefore, I'll have to just trust an accountant with the fundamentals of my business. You've got to build up enough of an understanding. So you can do it. It's a little bit like, being given a contract and saying, well, I don't read legalese, therefore I'll just trust a lawyer. It's like, you've still got to understand it enough that means that you can agree to a contract. You can't just hand it to them and ignore it. And I think that's the challenge, is that often people get that wrapped up. They think that because they don't understand double entry bookkeeping and account codes and VAT rates and whatever, therefore it's acceptable for them not to understand their profit and loss and their balance sheet or their cash flow forecast. And it's like, no, those things are separate, right?
I agree. And I think a lot of, especially small business owners, will only do their profit and loss and things like that once a year. And I'm like, whoa, that's way too much of a gap. Like, you need to be doing that monthly to keep an eye, because actually that's the only way that you're going to see the invoices have not been paid, or you've got problematic clients that are going over your payment terms. That's the only way that you're going to see actually that you're spending £1,000 a month on advertising, but because you're throwing it here, there and everywhere, actually you've got no concept of that. So I definitely think that small business owners, and I think it's just a case of a confidence thing. And I think as business owners, we feel like we need to know our stuff about everything. Like, we wear so many hats, and I get that, but actually your numbers are one thing that you should be confident about. And there's been times where I've not been confident, and like I said, like, I don't enjoy it, to be honest. My accountant comes to my house while I'm cooking dinner. I mean, he's brilliant. He's definitely kind of come on this journey with me. And he's so flexible, which is great, but he knows as soon as he starts getting too detailed, I just glaze over. So I'm quite a straight to the point kind of person, and he's definitely started to acknowledge that. But I still will, in my own time, sit there and scrutinize the Excel sheet and actually think, well, what can we do here, and where can we save this, or what can we pull, or what do we need to push? And that, as a business owner, is what you should be doing. I think it's about that whole bird's eye view.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome. And talking about things that you love doing, because as you mentioned there, it's doing the analysis, doing the numbers isn't something that you're particularly passionate about, but you see the value in, and it allows you to build the business that you do love. So you've had a few roles that you've really enjoyed in the past. I know that the role that you've often described as liking the most was when you were working in retail and creating deals and making money as part of that. Mm-hmm. And then obviously since then you had the childcare role as well, which you've got passion for that too. How have you, because for some people, like, finding that passion is quite difficult. Like, they, you know, it's quite a common thing, particularly people in young people's when they're young in their career and they're asked, oh, you know, what would you love to do? It's like, oh, I don't know yet. Like, mm-hmm. how have you been able to kind of tap into what you're passionate about and then end up doing it?
I think I'm just that person that would never want to settle.
Yeah,
a bit of a giggle, you get that. Which is sometimes amazing, because actually I have no fear on moving from one thing to the next or making decisions and things like that. But in some ways I think, God, am I ever going to be like 100% happy because I'm always on to the next thing. But I just think in anything, in relationships, in work, in life, I just think actually we're only, it sounds really kind of cheesy, I guess, but we're only here once. And we're so lucky to wake up every single day. So why wake up and be miserable? If you're not happy in what you're doing, if you're not 100% fulfilled, then what is stopping you from trying something else? And I mean, I know you just said then about your children knowing what you're doing. Kind of, I get a bit awkward when people say to my 9-year-old and my 7-year-old, what do you want to do when you're older? Because I think, I know 60-year-olds that you could ask that question to and they still don't know. And I don't think we're in an age now where actually you have to go to school, you have to go to sixth form, you have to go to uni, you have to find a job, and then you have to work your way up that ladder and to as far as you can, and you have to stay in your lane. I am the complete opposite to that. I've come out of my lane so many different times, but actually, do you know what, in every single role I've given it my all, and as soon as I feel like I can't give it my all, that's when I move on, because I just think actually I have to be an inspiration to my children that it's not all just about grades, it's not about pleasing everybody else, that actually you just have to do what makes you happy. And I know that sounds really, really cheesy, but I think we have lost so many, you lose so many people, don't you, as you get older. And I just think actually you've just got one chance at it, and being happy is more important than anything else. And I can hand on heart say that actually for the last 9 years, I'm so happy with the decisions that I've made and the role and the life that I've made myself. Has it been easy? No. Has there been times where I've wanted to chuck in a towel and ask myself the question, like, what the hell am I doing? Yes. But overall, I don't wake up and think, oh, I've got to do this today, or oh, I've got to do that today. I love my life. And I think actually being happy is more important than staying in your lane 100%. So I just think I'm not scared to try new things.
That's
got me to where I am today, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think, you know, it's often said you have to do what you love. I think it's an interesting one though, isn't it? Because it's you can kind of look at it at different levels. Because for an entrepreneur, you could say, oh, well, they're doing what they love because they're working, you know, they're building a business that helps a particular customer or achieves a particular outcome or whatever. But of course, the reality of being an entrepreneur is that you have to wear multiple hats. And so doing what you love kind of needs to encompass doing the accounts for the business that you love and sorting out that legal issue or agreeing a term, you know, terms of use for the business that you love, and a whole raft of things that we may not, you know, activities that we may not love, but that you've kind of got to have that greater purpose of where you see that fitting
that
in, so that you're still there,
isn't it?
Yeah, sure.
And I think it's having that vision, and I think that's, as entrepreneurs, what we are so good at is having like that massive vision of what your life is going to be like or what your business is going to be like and actually what impact it's going to have in the world. So when I opened the salon, did I think about the day-to-day, because I'm not a hairdresser, did I think about the day-to-day cuttings and colorings of people's hair? No. What I concentrated on was the experience that it was giving people and what it enabled people to do. So those parents that didn't have any family around and their husbands were working away and they never had an hour to themselves, like that was what kept me going. And that I wanted it to be a safe place for parents to come to and for children to come to and just have them to have some hours to themselves and the kids to have fun. That was the big vision that I wanted. So I think that as entrepreneurs is what we need to keep our eye on, because not everybody can see that big picture.
Indeed. And when you were doing that, because that, you know, as you say, you're doing what you love, you see that big picture, you're helping those people do that. At the same time, you've kind of also got to make sure that you're enjoying the family life of it yourself too, right? Because you're helping a load of people get those breaks and whatever. How did you make sure that you and family and so on were still kind of looked after or enjoying themselves? And because that must have been quite tough when you're running a business that in theory is has got a crèche so that the kids of clients are being looked after, but of course in practice doesn't work for, I imagine, for putting your child in the crèche all day long at that place and basically going, sorry, mummy has to work all day.
So how did you
juggle all of that?
I think I'm really lucky that my mum's kind of down the road, my mother-in-law's down the road, and they're both quite helpful. But my kids did have to go to nursery, and that was a decision that we made. So, and the fact that Lottie was the smallest baby in that nursery when we opened Serenity, that was a really hard kind of week for me. But actually, again, it just goes back to what I said before about the big picture. Yes. So actually, kind of, we opened in 2012. And now by the time they've gone to school, I am that mum that can drop them off and pick them up. And I mean, I went to then one of my daughter's netball festivals yesterday in the freezing cold. And I am that parent that has that flexibility. So that it was almost that short-term pain for the long-term gain. So without bragging at all, they go to a very lovely school. But there is no way that we'd have been able to afford if we didn't take those risks and set up our own businesses those years ago. And we are lucky enough that we can just book a holiday to go away in the half terms, and it's more about the freedom. If I want to take a day off, actually I will take a day off. So this morning I have been working really hard the last few weeks, so my husband took the girls to school and I didn't get out of bed until 12 o'clock today. So yeah, exactly. So again, I think, do you know what I mean, it wasn't easy. We had a whole wedding planned here and in 2012, and we cancelled it and we went abroad because it was just too much stress with opening the salon and stuff like that. So we made huge sacrifices for the first few years, but actually, touch wood, we now have the rest of our lives to go away or to spend or to sit and do homework with and be able to have their dinner cooked when they walk through the door and things like that. My flexibility is more now, is better than any other person that I know around me, which is amazing. But at the same time, like I said, it was that short-term pain. I missed out on loads of things. It was a case of actually not going to friends' kids' birthday parties at a weekend because I had to be in the salon and things like that. But now my kids know who I am. I'm there to pick them up. I'm there to take them to their extracurricular activities. We involve them in where they want to go on holiday and all of that. So again, it's just about that big picture, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. And I guess partly supporting that and enabling you to do that, because I think it would be easy to look at that and go, oh, well, yes, hasn't Joe done a good job of building a business that makes money that affords these things? But of course, it's not solely about the money. It's about the team. And something that I know that you've been sort of big on and talked about in the past is around delegation and setting up your team so that they can support you. And I guess a perfect example of that would be Serenity Loves, where, as you say, you went into that not as someone who cuts hair, but as someone who's building a business for other people to cut the hair of other people. So you were forced to delegate in that business very early on, I imagine. How have you, is delegation something that you found came naturally? How have you found that it works best, and are there any particular tips that you'd give on for anyone that's kind of struggles with delegation more generally?
I think I've always, I've never been shy in asking people to do things that I don't want to do, even at school. I was particularly bad at things like art and things like that. And if I could get somebody else to do it.
You're delegating your homework.
So I've never really, I remember in primary school actually getting people to do things. But I think there's a fine line between bossy and delegation, and I would hope that I'm not bossy, but I think actually it is about recognizing your strengths and weaknesses, for sure. And I've done a lot of work on that over the last few years, but I think it's a case of I think when you become a parent, especially, I mean, I know it sounds really stereotypical, and I hope that your listeners will maybe agree, but I think when you become a mum, you feel like you have to do everything. So I definitely kind of went from not being bothered about being a control freak or anything like that, really kind of laid back and things like that, to as soon as I became a mum, feeling like I had to do everything perfectly. So I had to make the bottles. I had to kind of choose the clothes. I had to do all of that. I had to be the one that kind of soothed her. Although my husband is amazing and he's the best dad, I felt like it was my responsibility because I was at home to do everything for her. And things like that. So it definitely, as I became a mum, turned into more of a control freak for sure. But actually, when you're in business, I see so many people holding on and trying to do everything, and it's just impossible. So they end up having a breakdown or burnout or just absolutely just losing the plot and either closing their business or just feeling like they're rubbish at everything. And I did feel like that for probably the first few months, but actually it is a case of there's people around you and they want to help you, and do you know what, you're paying them. So if they have strengths that you don't have, then utilize those strengths, because you're not going to be good at everything and you're not going to enjoy everything, and you physically can't do everything that it takes to run a business and a family and a home and a social life. So at some point, you have to learn to let go of something. So whether that's getting a cleaner in once a week, or somebody to do your ironing, or whether that's somebody to do your social media or answer phones or your emails or whatever, I think actually once you start doing it bit by bit, it becomes a lot easier. And it is hard because you think nobody's going to be able to do a job as good as I will, and they're not going to do it exactly how I will or as well as I will. But you know what? I think done is better than perfect. There were things that were not getting done because I would think that somebody wouldn't be able to do it like I did it, or wouldn't be able to know how to do it, but actually they weren't getting done, which was causing more problems. So as long as it was done, then that was the most important thing, I think.
Yeah, very good. And how have you sort of continued to manage and lead your team as you've kind of both grown it and also started up, essentially starting up a completely separate business, right? It's not like the Unique Mumpreneur was kind of an offshoot of Serenity Loves. It's separate, and I believe it has separate staff and so on. So how's that worked to kind of be able to build that and still make sure that you're giving the leadership and the management of the staff that's needed?
So I'm really big on upskilling my staff. That's definitely one thing. And the fact that we do have like a really family kind of culture. So that's really important to me. So yeah, all of our hairdressers are not just kind of qualified hairdressers. Obviously, that's their priority. They do their level two and they do their level three with us. But actually, most of them then have MBQs in customer service. They have them in team leadership. They have them in management. They're first aid trained. They do fire safety. Like, we upskill our staff as much as we can. So I think actually by doing so, we're giving them the tools, and things like that they can all help run the salon, and they feel like they're appreciated, and they're not just there to make loads of money cutting hair. Actually, we do believe in them, and that they can achieve more and things like that. So we tend to get them in as apprentices, and we train them up to be juniors, and then stylists, and then seniors, and then that's kind of where the customer service and the management kind of MBQs and training come in. So luckily we have the most amazing team, and because we have that kind of family culture, we buy flowers for each other and presents and cards and stuff at birthdays and Christmas and things like that. They have their birthday paid off. So I think it's that whole thing. I think Richard Branson said, like, train them so well that they can leave, but treat them so well that they don't want to. So all the girls are so proud to work for Serenity and everything that we do. We do loads of charity work, which they love. And we really try and give back to the community. We've won loads of awards. So they're really proud to work where they work. And unlike other salons, where they do come in and they are kind of a hairdresser, they're on the chair and that's it. Everybody actually mucks in at our salon. So they all do a bit of social media, they all answer the phone, they all kind of do the cleaning up. And there's no, although there is a hierarchy almost of like manager and kind of employees, there's not, because actually everybody mucks in. So when I go in, I'll do the washing up and I'll answer the phone and I'll sweep up. So I think we're really clear that nobody's better than anybody else. So everybody is kind of happy then to help each other out and to take on more responsibility when needed and things like that. And the fact that they've been there for a few years, and we do tend to keep our staff quite well, is the fact that actually trusted to do things when it needs to be done, really. So I don't feel like I'm always in the way when I get in there, to be honest. But I take on socials and we'll attend some of the team meetings and things like that, and kind of go in and take them chocolates and catch up with them in the staff room, and just to show them that I am still there. So I hope that works well.
Yeah, no, that's really great, and I love that Branson quote too. I think yeah, it's so true that there seems to be it sort of died down a bit now, but a few years ago, I think perhaps around the sort of time of Tim Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek book and so on, there seemed to be this attitude bubbling up around outsourcing, using contractors, low paid that are good enough, people, not people that you're particularly developing and so on, and but they're you're comparatively paying them well, and therefore they do a job, and as a result that allows you to sit on the beach somewhere. And it kind of feels like, as I've as we've seen from other interviews and so on, it's like that approach very rarely, if ever, yields long-term positive results, because of course you know, those people move on, or the gap, you know, there's cracks form, or as you attempt to grow, you then don't have the management and so on. Whereas, as you say, like properly nurturing the staff and doing all the training and so on, yes, it takes time. Yes, it costs money and it's an investment, but it's an investment that pays off long term. And of course, the more you can build it as part of the culture and the process and just the way that you do things, actually, you know, it's like when you describe giving each other cards and flowers and so on. For someone like me that's generally bad at that with my family, never mind colleagues, you know, that sounds like, oh, isn't that, you know, really difficult and like, you know, yet another hassle on your admin list. But I suspect that it's just part of how you operate. And therefore, no, I suspect if I'll ask you, but it's like, is that a lot of effort or does it just come naturally?
No, I think it just comes naturally, I think. I think it takes, I mean, we're moving in with the Unique Mumpreneur, we're moving into sending handwritten birthday cards to people. Because I think actually as technology takes over so much, it is about the little things. And I think in life sometimes, like I said earlier, like we look at the big picture and things like that, but actually it's really important. I've definitely learned over the last kind of year or two, it's the small things that make up the big things. So some people may assume that they'll come to me as a business mentor and a coach and I'm going to give them this magic pill or this simple process that they're going to follow and they're going to double their profits or triple their profits or whatever, and it's going to be that easy. And I think maybe a couple of people have been quite shocked when actually I break it down and I'm like, it's the little things that you do consistently that are going to get you those huge results. So I mean, the last 12 months, we've won some massive awards and had some really exciting things happen and invitations to amazing places. And it's not because of the work that we've done in the last 12 months. It's actually all the small things that we've done over the last 9 years that's got us to where we are now. And I think a lot of people forget that.
Yeah.
They see people that are exploding on TV as singers or actors or whatever, and think, and there's this whole phrase of overnight success, and I think, well, they've probably been to a million auditions, they've probably worked in McDonald's or wherever to pay the bills while they've been going to all these auditions and getting knocked back to knocked back and knocked back, and actually it's this one role that's made them explode. But yeah, we just forget about the little things. So actually a lovely handwritten card put through your inbox or your postbox or whatever, or some flowers that are delivered to work on your work anniversary or your birthday, I think actually they're the things that a lot of people miss out. And I think that's why small businesses have a huge advantage over the big businesses now, because we are looking for that personal connection again, I think. I mean, yes, Amazon are great, we can get next day delivery, but actually if you're a woman and you're looking for a dress and for a really important event, I'm not the sort of person to go online. I'm the sort of person to go into John Lewis because there's a personal shopper there and I haven't got the time and I just need somebody to get me something that's going to fit. And I would rather pay double for that personal service, for that dress, but by getting that personal service than I would than ordering something offline. So I think business owners should really look at those small things that actually they can introduce into their business for their customers and their employees that would really be touching, I think.
Yeah, I love it. Well, and that's great advice around sort of managing and building the team. Absolutely love it, Joe. Unfortunately, we're running out of time. Thank you so much for your time today. It's been really fantastic talking to you and hearing about, frankly, your amazing career and the various steps that you've taken. The work that you've done and lessons you've learned throughout. Before we go, I'll make sure that I add links to Serenity Loves and the Unique Mumpreneur in our show notes, and highly recommend that people check out more about what Jo does and the content. She's got some fantastic content there that goes deeper into some of the topics we've talked about. Jo, is there any other links or any other ways in which people can reach out to you?
We have obviously we're on social media. I love people to follow us on the Unique Mumpreneur. We've got a community group as well in there, and we have some really fascinating conversations and people looking for advice and stuff. So it is a free community on Facebook. So we do encourage people to kind of add themselves into that and become a part of the community. And like you said, there's loads of free resources and blogs and things like that that we try and help small business owners with their businesses. So yeah, no, I've really enjoyed it. I can't believe how quickly it went. Thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure. Well, thank you again so much for your time, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Oh, thank you so much. Take care.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode and have taken away some ideas that you can put into practice. You can find the links to any resources mentioned in this episode over on the show notes at parentpreneur.com/podcast. If you found this podcast useful, then please review it on iTunes. 5-star review ratings would absolutely make my day. Also, please join the conversation on this episode. Just head over to the Parentpreneur Accelerator community on Facebook, where you'll find other parentpreneurs that are sharing their experiences and helping each other to succeed. To find the group, just visit parentpreneur.com/community. Thanks very much.